Welcome to In Movies We Grow. I am your host, Kale Smith, and today we have a brand new guest from Rebel Scum Podcast himself, James Rizzell. He has been on my show.
So tell me more. So why is Love, Victor?
And he's a great guy. Has a much more, you know, experience in, you know, movie watching, and has a longer, you know, history with film than a lot of my colleagues hosts as of late. But that's what makes him the most interesting, and I really found his interview really good, and we dug into a lot of stuff, so much so that I'm splitting this into two parts. We'll do this first part is mostly him growing up in the 80s and 90s, and kind of leading, and we kind of end the show leading into the 2000s. And then, you know, the part two will, you know, we'll round up from the 2000s to the 10s, and now where he's at with Rebel Scum Podcast. So just, you know, hang with us. We will have a part two. I don't know if that'll be the next episode. Usually I've been kind of wanting to save any part two episodes for like the next, like, round of, you know, the next season, but we'll see. And yeah, so thank you everyone for listening, and here is the episode with James.
Canada has been pretty good. I think we've been handling it all right. Where I live in the woods now, so it's just me, my wife, and some deer for the most part. And the deer all seem pretty safe with the COVID. But Joe, we've been all right. A few cases has been springing up lately around us, which is a little. It kind of is weird because I don't live in very. There's not a lot of people here. The population is very small, so when one or two people get it, you know, it's a little bit more concerning than when 100 people get it in a bigger city. But we're doing all right. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I also live in a relatively small town, and I wish we were doing better. That we were doing as good as you guys. I wish I could say that. But I mean, it is what it is, and it is kind of, you know, and regarding to your small town thing, we've always had cases, but it's never been like an extreme, you know, it's never been super extreme, so I guess that's why, you know, some of the, you know, regulations here have been so laxed, because it's not really that much, it's not that many people getting sick that quickly.
Yeah. It's a weird time. It's a weird time too, because, you know, there's very few people where I am, but there's, you know, especially in the summertime, there's a lot of travelers coming that come through here. Mm-hmm. So I think where I am, we've basically had to treat it like we were a larger city because of the people coming in. And
right,
I mean, you never know. It's so bizarre out there. You know, whether or not you're going to get it, how you can get it, and you might have it and not even realize it, which is even the weirder part.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, every time, you know, my coworkers or my mother and sister cough, it's like, are you okay? Here's something to taste. Smell this candle real quick. You know, it's that kind of, you know, paranoia that you're just, you know, that you are stricken with because you hear what is happening to metropolitan areas. And, you know, when we're listening to our colleagues from our metropolitan areas, and so, you know, and hearing their horror stories. So those are always sitting in the back of our minds while, you know, you and I are in less populated areas.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So backing up before COVID, all the way, so let me ask you this, James. Do you remember the first movie you do you remember the first what's the first movie you remember seeing?
I remember seeing. Oh boy, I'm old. This is tough. I don't know if I remember seeing a movie, but I do remember Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Pinocchio, the cartoon. Like those were ones that I've just known about, and I know I would watch them on old VHS tapes way back when I was a kid. I think my mom told me the first movie I ever saw in the theater was like Cinderella or something like that, like a Disney cartoon in the theater before I could think. So one of those ones, it's hard because I know it had to have been one of those. I think I was just sat down and my parents were like, just watch these. And it was Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and whatnot. So I'm going to go with one of those two for sure. Raiders of the Lost Ark, to be more specific.
All right. And and for Star Wars, is it A New Hope?
It would either be that or Empire. Okay. It would have been one of the first two for sure. I would imagine it was A New Hope.
Okay. My generation just calls Star Wars A New Hope for some reason because of marketing and the special editions.
When I was growing up, mostly playing with the toys, but I had them on tape and I'd watch them. And when I was really young, they were interchangeable. Like I didn't really, one or the other, it didn't matter. It was like put on Star Wars and it was either Empire or New Hope or Jedi even. I don't think it was Jedi though, because Jedi I would have gotten when I was older. So like 3 or 4, but it was just Star Wars. So it wasn't A New Hope. And the special editions was when I really knew it as A New Hope. Because I even had, growing up, like a little kid, I had the novelization, my dad's old novelization of it. And they didn't say A New Hope on it anywhere. So I didn't know it as A New Hope until later on in life. So it was just like Star Wars was Star Wars. You know, Luke was Luke and Vader was his father. It was just all common knowledge to me when I was a kid. So it was always hard to differ. And of course, Indiana Jones, there was only Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first 4 or 5 years of my life.
All right. I think it was only recently when the DVDs and Blu-rays came out, they actually put in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, we called it Indiana Jones, but yeah, it was Raiders of the Lost Ark for sure.
Wow. So in leaping off of that, what kind of movies were you watching growing up, you know, besides Star Wars and Indiana Jones?
Yeah, it was Star Wars and Indiana Jones up top, and then like the Disney cartoons were always big with me. I was more of a comedy guy for the most part of my life. Like Spaceballs. I remember going to the theater when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11 or whatever, and Hot Shots Part 2 came out. And family went to go see in the theater. Yeah, we only like a certain class of movies, so we went to go see Hot Shots Part 2 in the theater. And I vividly remember leaving the theater, and the standee for Robin Hood Men in Tights was just standing on the wall, and it had Robin Hood with the three arrows and the bow. And me and my sister were like, we have to see this movie. Very high class. So it was like Mel Brooks was a heavy part of my childhood for sure. Watched a lot of Mel Brooks movies. And comedies were the big thing. I grew up watching on TV. I grew up watching SCTV and old. My grandmother in her basement, she had like this vast VHS collection. Everything taped off TV, and she had a binder. And in the binder, everything was alphabetical by number. And you could find what you want to watch by number. She was like your own personal Blockbuster. And I would go down and you could find anything from like a Conehead skit to the Thriller music video to the Rescuers Down Under. Like it was all there. And I just went and I would watch like old Saturday Night Live tapes, old SCTV. So if there was a Saturday Night Live movie like Coneheads or something came out, I was all over that. But mostly I stayed with comedy to the whole thing. I didn't horror. I only liked Chucky growing up. And it wasn't until I was like 11 or 12 when my mom was like, we can watch Chucky. And I was so excited. Yeah, that was, I was a comedy guy for the most part of my life. Star Wars and Raiders were like, were something else. And Jaws, I loved. And, oh, and Die Hard. God, I remember my dad was like, we have to watch this movie called Die Hard. And he just grabbed, he takes me downstairs and like, watch this Die Hard movie. I said, okay. It was the greatest experience of my life as a 10-year-old or whatever I was.
Nice. So for, you know, was Die Hard like your introduction to action movies, or were you already kind of into that, you know, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, action genre as it were then?
No, I mean, I always knew, like, you know, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, they were always around. I went to go see Cliffhanger in the theater with my dad, and they turned us away because I was too young and it was rated R. But I remember this is how the movies were. No, I knew them. I wasn't into them as much. Like I said, I was more comedy or like Disney cartoon. Like that's where I mostly was. And, but might be, you know, we watched Indiana Jones. I remember watching Temple of Doom for the first time. That was exciting. And Jaws I liked, but Die Hard, I don't know what it was about Die Hard, but my dad was like, you have to watch this movie. And I have no idea if he had seen it or not when he made me watch it, but he was like, we're going to watch this. And I remember just being like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then when Die Hard 2 came out, I was like, I need to see this. And obviously I couldn't see it in the theater because I was young. And when it came out on our movie networks here, I had it taped for me and I wore that tape out. It was Die Hard 2 became my favorite movie of all. It was like Die Hard 2 and Look Who's Talking and Jaws the Revenge were like my top three movies at that time of my life. It was the weirdest collection of movies and bad sequels, but they were my favorite movies for so long. I was obsessed with them, and I had this VHS tape and I just watched them on a loop.
Okay, I have to ask about Jaws the Revenge. Yeah. What was the appeal of that one?
I think, I love Jaws. I still love Jaws. I'm a big Jaws guy. But so Jaws, the first Jaws I remember watching, and I watched it with my dad, and he was all like, oh, it's the best. Da, 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 this guy's going to eat him by a shark. And we watched it. And Jaws Revenge, we didn't really watch the sequels. It was just Jaws. And I was at a friend's house, and Jaws came on. I was like, oh, we got to watch Jaws. It's the best. And it was called Jaws the Revenge. I was like, what? Is this another Jaws? And I don't know. I just, there's just something. And I think because I knew so, you know, I was young too, but because I knew so much about the first Jaws, and this one was the fourth one. And, you know, it was like Brody was, you know, died from a heart attack because of the shark. And it killed his son. It
was
the
fear that was put into him.
It was terrible. But it was, you know, and I don't even think I knew who like Michael Caine was or anything at the time. It was just, I just saw this movie and I was like, this is a sequel to Jaws. And I loved it. And again, it was on that movie channel and I taped it, put on the same tape as Luke Was Talking. And I watched it so much and I loved it. And I can't explain it and I won't try to, and I won't try to justify it. It was just one of those movies that you watch when you're younger and you're obsessed with it. I haven't watched it in years. I'm afraid. I've thought about just buying it for fun, and then I'm worried about watching it and it ruining my childhood. So I had a lot of fun. I remember Billy Crystal made that joke at the 99 Oscars, but when Michael Caine was nominated for the Cider House Rules, he said, "Well, why did you?" He sang that song at the beginning. He goes, "Well, why did you have to make Jaws 4?" And I was like, "But I love Jaws 4." It's just, I don't know. I'm not going to defend it. It was just one of those things that I liked.
No, that's perfect. You know, to me, I like Jaws 4 because it is so, it was such a rush production that they literally just, whatever made it on the page got shot, and that's the result of it. It's a movie where they just, I mean, they made it up as they went along. They just greenlit something, and it turned out, you know, to be a hilarious, you know, movie, a hilariosity, if you will.
Yeah, I can't. I haven't seen it. God, it's been over 20 years since I've seen it. For sure, I'm gonna rewatch. You know, and now that we're talking, I'm gonna definitely rewatch it. You're saying it's hilarious. I gotta, because as a kid, I didn't think it was scary or anything. As a kid, I just enjoy. It was, I don't know. It was like color. I don't know. It was just, I just enjoyed it. It was just what it is, what it was, and I understood it. And I think because it kept tying back to that one that I love so much and I knew so well, that that I went along for the ride.
I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed it as a kid, I think, because it was just all part of that, you know. It's the same reason why I loved, you know, all the Batman movies when I was a kid, even Batman and Robin. It's just like, it was just part of that chronology.
Yeah, I'm the same. I like Batman and Robin as well when I saw, especially in the theater, and I bought it. I got it on VHS. I just bought the digital copy of all four of those movies, and I watched Batman Forever the most, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. And
oh, me too. I've also seen Batman and Robin way more than I should admit to.
Yeah, I had a Batman and Robin poster when I was I didn't care, but it was Batman. So with Batman, I grew up with Adam West. Like, Adam West was my Batman growing up. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, Tim Burton's Batman didn't exist for 8 years of my life. And when you're, you know, when you're a kid, especially a boy, you get, like, superheroes are thrown on you, right? They're thrust upon you like crazy. Like, you're going to play with Batman and Superman. I had Batman, Superman, Hawkman, Aquaman, Robin, like all of them, right?
Right.
And but Adam West was Batman. He wore gray and blue, and he was super campy, and his belt had everything he needed for every situation in it.
Yeah, and Robin didn't have pants.
Robin didn't have pants, but the cartoons were the same. They were still, Adam West was still Batman, and the voices were always around the same, and they all looked the same, and they're all kind of goofy. And when the Tim Burton one came out, it was, you know, and I was eight years old, whatever I was. It was, I liked it. I was like, that was, it was, I love the Joker. Jack Nicholson Joker blew my mind when I was a kid. More than anything else in that movie, was just the Joker. I had the Batman action figure, but the Joker one, I remember after I watched the movie, I was like, I really, really wanted that one. And that blew my mind. But then, and then Batman Returns came, and I was like, yeah, that's fine. And then when Forever came out, I was all in, because it kind of, I was older, but it kind of took me back to my Adam West days of Batman. And when Batman and Robin came out, I was like, this is Adam, this is my old, this is my, this is more my Batman. This is what I grew up with a lot more fluorescence. But it's kind of, so I kind of always appreciated on that other level. So I don't know. I think the Joel Schumacher interview says it all, where he had to sell more toys. So I think you understand where they were going. But, you know, I think every movie, there's an audience for every movie, is what I'll say.
Oh, yeah. I think, to me, I mean, I enjoyed the original, like, kind of that run of both Burton and Schumacher because, yeah, you know, each movie was distinctly different, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, Batman and Robin, you know, has its problems. But I think people should take another look at it and just kind of appreciate for the insanity it is. Not for the hilariousness of it, just the insanity that Joel Schumacher was working under.
Yeah, that's what I would say. It was definitely there's like the talk of the Batman Forever Schumacher cut now going around. And as much as I love Batman Forever, but I'm like, I'm curious to see what that would be. Just curious. I don't know. I don't think I need it, but I would be curious to see if it is real. If it's not real, my life won't suffer because it doesn't exist.
Well, it's probably just like the Snyder cut. It's just another, it was one of the cuts they had, you know, working, and then I know that originally it was supposed to be a darker movie, and then Jim Carrey, as the story goes, was blowing up in 1994 as they were filming, you know, as they were filming Batman Forever. So they were like, put this Carrey in, the studio was like, no, put Carrey in the movie more. So they shot more Carrey, and then they edited around, you know, pretty much around Jim Carrey, because he was supposed to be...
Yeah.
Because they wanted him in as much of the movie as possible.
Which you kind of, you know, it's hard to disagree with that from a financial perspective. Like,
oh no, it's,
he was the draw.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna you know, I wouldn't, you know, put Warner Brothers to the coals or anything for that decision, but I do think if anyone wondered why the Schumacher, Batman Forever Schumacher was such a tonal, like, 180, it's really more because of that, because Joel Schumacher did come in, even into filming, to do, you know, kind of in the same, you know, tone as the, you know, Batman Returns. It's just, it warped over a short amount of time. You have to remember, they only had like 10 weeks to edit this whole movie. So,
that's crazy.
So, I don't know if there is a cut as much as there's just a whole lot of extra footage that you could do a fan edit of to be a more darker movie.
Yeah, and more, I'm one of these people where I love Man of Steel. And I like Batman versus V Superman quite a bit. And Justice League was whatever, but I'm all for seeing the Snyder Cut, but I'm also somebody who, when you give me a movie, I'm pretty content with what I get. Now I think the Snyder Cut is a little bit different. I think some of these movies are a little bit different where, you know, the creativity gets ripped from underneath them, these people. Mm-hmm. And it's not the movie that was meant to be. But for the most part, when people, you know, like Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker, things like that, where people are like, oh, give me this cut. I'm like, does that exist? I don't think it does either. But I think sometimes there's very few, there's very few instances where that does exist. And I think the Snyder Cut was clearly one of them. But I think people have this, I don't know what it is, they fantasize about movies where there's always this better version of every movie, or not a better version, but a version that would satisfy them of every movie that exists out there. And I don't think that's necessarily true ever.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of, not to continue on the tangent, but, you know, I think it kind of started with movies like, you know, Once Upon a Time in America, where Sergio Leone's movie got cut down to like 2 hours or something, when it was originally supposed to be like a 4-hour epic. And now that it's somewhat mostly restored to what it originally was supposed to be, the movie has gone to have a much better reception. And then you get to the, you know, Event Horizon, you know, which had a whole other two hour and 20 minute cut that got cut down to like an hour and a half. So I think it's mostly just like what you said, fans kind of fantasize about what the movie could have been, and that becomes what people talk about a movie versus the actual, you know, product itself.
Exactly. And that's why if this Snyder Cut exists, if the Schumacher Cut happens to exist, I will gladly view it if it's available. But if it doesn't exist again, I'm fine. I'm fine with what we got.
You know, Schumacher unfortunately has passed on. So, I mean, there's no real, so even if, unless there just happens to be a completed cut of the movie, I'd rather just be like, look, it's just a lost opportunity. Don't have someone come in, because I mean, the producer has passed away and the director has passed away. So really there's not anyone that could, you know, maybe Akiva Goldsman, but there's not really anyone that can come in and be like, and kind of be the Presudo supervisor of that cut.
Yeah, I'd imagine like Goldman and even probably Schumacher at this point, they've all moved on from it, I think. I don't think it's their Blade Runner necessarily where they want to go back and do an edit on it. I think they're all like, it is what it is. You know, it made money. I believe of the original four, it got for Ebert anyway. I think Ebert gave it the highest review of all the original four Batman movies. So it wasn't a complete disaster by any means.
Yeah, I don't think, it was not a bomb. It actually did almost just as good as the original Burton, I believe. So
yeah, I mean, Batman and Robin was a bomb. It made, but it still made like 100 and whatever million, but 150 million. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you have to understand, Warner Brothers was just having really bad, they were a really bad end of the decade.
Well, I mean, when you get beat by Runaway Bride, That's a problem.
Oh yeah. When you get, and then you choose to do a Wild West movie that is $200 million versus a $200 million Tim Burton Superman movie, you know you're in big trouble.
Yeah. So it wasn't one Runaway Bride. It was My Best Friend's Wedding. Was up against Batman same weekend as Batman and Robin, and it slaughtered Batman and Robin.
Oh my god!
Slaughtered it. Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do?
Hey, The Matrix came and saved the day.
Matrix, and then they made two more that didn't save the day.
Yeah. So, did you see The Matrix when you were?
Yeah.
I guess a teenager at this point, right?
Yeah, I think I was in. It was the same year as Phantom Menace, right? I think it was in grade 12.
Okay. Sort of
12th grade, as you'd say. I was around there, and yeah, Matrix came out, and I saw it, and I thought it was. I liked it. I wasn't as blown away by it as everybody else. I felt like it borrowed a lot from a lot of literature that I had read. Not that anything else doesn't, but it wasn't as overwhelming as a lot of people made it sound. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. But I didn't feel like I needed any more, to be honest. Like I liked the first one and I was content with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I haven't watched the sequels in a while, and I've been meaning to do it because I own that whole trilogy box set. But I think for me, the first one, it's revolutionary because you combine kind of the reluctant hero with the chosen one narrative. You combine those two narratives because that's really what Neo is. He's a reluctant hero. He's reluctant until he has to save somebody. He has to save Morpheus. So that's, to me, I think the new spin on it. And I mean, I still think it's a good movie. I should have done a retrospective on it last year, but I didn't do any retrospective. So that's my excuse. but yeah, like that was kind of, yeah. So kind of, I know we almost skipped the night. Is there anything significant that was huge for you that what came out in the 90s?
The 90s had a lot. Well, you know, I think that the 90s had one of the most, I mean, I think The Phantom Menace was one of the most exciting theatrical releases leading up to it, especially with, you know, the trailers like on QuickTime that took like 17 hours to download and the hype around that. But they also had, I don't know if you remember, if you're even aware, but movies now were so, I mean, not now with the pandemic, but movies didn't come out back then. You know, like it wasn't like every weekend there was another big movie coming out. You were lucky when July came, you're like, okay, what is it? And I remember Independence Day was so massive and so exciting to go see, because it was an event, you know. Like I always say, these Star Wars movies that are coming out now, when they keep releasing them every year, and when they have TV shows, you lose out on the event feeling of it. But Independence Day, maybe Men in Black, but Independence Day, I think more so, was like the last true, like, oh my god, this is a thing in the theater. Because then blockbusters started to come more and more, right? And then after Independence Day, like every disaster movie came out. But Independence Day was such a huge movie to go see. I remember Letterman for like an entire month, like every day on Letterman, he would talk about it and have a guest for it. And the buildup was insane. The movie's okay.
it was for the 90s.
Yeah, but it was more, the thing is, it wasn't just the movie, it was like everything around the movie that was exciting. And it's a movie, I got just off track for, but movies are fascinating to me too, because growing up in the 80s, I knew about Beetlejuice, but it was a Beetlejuice cartoon that I always watched, but I knew it was a movie, but the cartoon was what I watched. And like Ghostbusters, I love those movies, but I also love the cartoon. And it's weird how that kind of died off But Independence Day, like if it would have been made 10 years earlier, they would have, I would have loved that Independence Day cartoon show.
I mean, they did a Godzilla cartoon for a little bit.
True, they did.
You know, when Emmerich made his Godzilla movie.
What a great movie that was. Sorry, a great soundtrack to a movie.
Oh, okay.
I saw that in the theater. That was an experience.
Let me ask, like, how did that go? How'd that go over with people?
I think that was the same weekend as Deep Impact. I think it was, and I remember I think I saw Deep Impact and I was like, ugh. And then that night, on one of our channels here, they played like a Godzilla marathon of all the old Godzillas, and I watched a bunch of them from like, I don't know, like 9-10 o'clock at night until like 3-4 in the morning, and I just watched Godzilla. And the next day my friend was like, you want to go see Godzilla? And I said, yes, because I just watched them all. And I watched it, and I had, and that year I got the soundtrack because the soundtrack was great back then. And I just, I had fun watching that movie. I thought at the end, I was like, okay, well, they're just doing Jurassic Park. Fine, whatever. My basketball team is named after Jurassic Park, so I have nothing to complain about. I haven't watched it since the theater. So that'll tell you something. But I did enjoy it. I came back. I was like, yeah, it was fine. It was Godzilla. There's a giant dinosaur running around New York. What do you want?
Mm-hmm. I do think it was a major flex to have the Godzilla teaser in front of Lost World.
Oh, yeah.
That was a pretty good flex over there, Mr. Emmerich.
Oh, yeah. The Jurassic Park movies came out in the 90s. Had so many movies. I'll tell you, Jurassic Park is one of my two most disappointing movies I've ever seen in the theater. I love Jurassic Park too, but two movies that disappointed me the most were that everybody loves was Jurassic Park, the original, and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory were two, because I had read the books before and I just couldn't get over the movie. It took me like 10 years to get over Jurassic Park and finally just liked the movie.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the original Jurassic Park you were disappointed in because of the book.
Yeah, when I was 10 years old, which was, I think, a year before the movie came out, I love dinosaurs, because what kid doesn't? And my parents had this book on the kitchen table, and it had a dinosaur skeleton on it. And I was like, what is that? And I said, oh, this is a book about dinosaurs coming back. And I said, I have to read it. So I took it, I read this book. I was 10. Maybe 11, 10 or 11. And I just read this book all the way through, and I was like fascinated by everything in it. I became a huge Michael Crichton fan after that. And I was fascinated by it. And then the movie came out. I went to the theater and I started watching it. And I watched it on a friend's birthday, and I was like, what's going on? What the hell's happening? Then I was like, we have to go see that again. I took my parents. I'm like, I'm 12 years old at the time. And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm watching with my parents. I was like, well, that, no. And I was like, right? Is it missing? I'm like, it's missing something that the book had. And I was, I couldn't get over it. And then I read the Lost World book, and that book was not very good. And I went to go see the movie. And I thought that time the movie to me was better than the book. it was weird. I'm like, okay. So I became a huge, so I love the Lost World. But eventually I ended up separating the, and it's, you know, what's funny. God, these tangents I'm going on. But it's funny because Jaws is another one. I read Jaws after I saw the movie, but I love the book Jaws. But it's very different from the movie. And Jurassic Park is obviously different from the movie. And books are always different from the movie. That's how it is. And there used to be this thing where the book was always better than the movie. And I've noticed now, especially, you know, on Twitter, and everyone's like, the book is never better than the movie. And the examples they have are always Jurassic Park, the movie, is better than the book. Oh, and I'm wondering now, I think that might be, it's because now it's like the reverse of what it used to be, where you would read the book and then see the movie and you'd be disappointed because the movie cannot have everything in it that a book does. But now when you see the movie first, the movie has something to you and it means something to you, and then you go back and you read the book, you're like, well, that's not as good. I don't need all that information.
Right. Well, for me, the only example that I know of where the And not to jump on Jaws, the book, but I know a lot of people that like the movie more than the book
Yeah.
Jaws. So personally, I've never read Jaws. I don't, it's, can you even find a copy of Jaws now?
I got it 20 something years ago at a library for 25 cents. They were doing a book sale and I bought it for 25 cents from a library.
Oh, good
And I
grief.
read it in one day. I was homesick and I read it, and I was in the eighth, I was grade eight. I was in the eighth grade. And I read it one day. I was homesick and I just read Jaws, and I loved it. I know people say the movie's better. I don't, it's, I love the movie, so I don't want to disagree, but I also, the book isn't one of my favorite books, but I think the book has so much more to it. It's deeper. And Jaws is just such a classic movie that I think that affects your opinion of the book, because there's way more in the book.
I think the only time where I've read something and then it got like a little better in the movies was like the Last Mockingjay movie, those Hunger Games movies. Because I feel, because I think, what Suzanne Collins was trying to do with Mockingjay, I think just translated a lot better, visually than what she was trying to get through. And plus, of course, she had to, she really did kind of rush the end of every. She had to rush to finish the book, so I'm sure that contributed to a lot of it. But I don't know. I'm much more open-minded to that one more than the books. But yeah, that's the only time, because and now I'm actually reading again. I'm reading the Easy Rider's Raging Bulls book,
Oh, nice.
and goodness gracious, wow, who knew? That who knew that Dennis Hopper was a psychopath?
Yeah. He made the perfect Bowser Koopa. There's another 90s movie that's amazing, the Super Mario Brother movie.
So for you, you played the Super Mario Brothers, right? I'm trying to remember our conversation from that
Oh, yeah, I love
scene.
them, yeah.
So what was that like, seeing that in the theater?
I didn't see Mario Bros. In the theater. Nobody would take me. That was a not gonna happen.
They almost you almost got taken the cliffhanger, but Super Mario Brothers, everybody was like, no, man, we ain't going.
Yeah, no. My dad was like, no, we're not gonna go. We were. I remember that summer I was in Florida, and the movie came out, and I bought a Cracked magazine where they made fun of it, because I was like, I need that. Every time we used to go to Florida every summer. And I used to get a Cracked magazine. Only when I went to Florida, I would buy a Cracked magazine. That was my thing. I went to Publix and I bought a Cracked magazine, a Publix brand cherry cola, and a Crunch bar. Because my favorite chocolate bar is not in the States, in your country, so I always had to like find like one that was like similar, but nothing ever was. So I was like, okay. So I always get like a Crunch bar. It was weird. This is my thing, and we went to 7-Eleven and got a Slurpee, and they had the big gulp mugs, the cups, and they had Florida Marlins, because they were in, I think they're pretty new at the time, and Super Mario Brother, the movie cup. And I was like, well, I gotta get the Super Mario Brother cup. And I bought that. But nobody would take me to the theater to see it. I ended up, again, the movie channels that I used to have, I taped it off of that, and I became obsessed with it. Just obsessed. I watched it like hundreds of times in one summer. Just became obsessed with this movie, and I would always try to like, in my mind, make up how it actually was like the game, like I would try to make connections where there clearly weren't real. There were very lazy connections, but I'd be like, no, it's actually genius. It's genius, and I built it up. So I had it on VHS. I taped it, and then I bought it on DVD, and I don't have it on Blu-ray. And there's no digital copy in existence, so I only have it on DVD somewhere. But, and it's like, the DVD is like a weird format too. It's not even like 16:9. It's like 4x3 letterbox. It's so weird.
My goodness. I mean, to me, yeah. I mean, I know it's not very like lovely regarded, not very well, but but I mean, in should get a I think it should get a 4K restoration. You know, it's part of video game movie history.
It is. And you know what's funny is Amazon Prime, in Canada anyway, has the Double Dragon movie. I don't know if you've been lucky enough to see the Double Dragon movie. But it has – it's such a great – it's I watched it on TV when I was younger. I love Double Dragon too. So I love this – and Street Fighter is a fantastic movie. I don't care what anyone says. But Double Dragon yeah. I love Street Fighter. It's so cheesy. Yeah, it's so good. But Super Mario Brothers, Double Dragon, and Street Fighter all have like the same look to them. It's so the same production value in all three of them. It's so bizarre. But for some reason, Double Dragon is Robert Patrick plays the bad guy. It's on Amazon Prime, but the Mario Brothers movie has just been like shunned. And I just watched Double Dragon like a couple months ago because, like I said, I watched it when I was younger. And I love the game, so I watched it. And it's a terrible movie, but I watched the entire thing straight through, so which is kind of an accomplishment. And I just watched Street Fighter less than a year ago on TV. It was on. I was like, I gotta watch Street Fighter. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Mario Bros. I can't find anymore. And I would argue it's the best of the three.
I would argue I haven't seen them, so I don't know. But I would argue just from looking at them, it's the best like production quality of the three.
Again, I think they're all pretty much the same. Well, yeah, I guess you know, with the puppets and stuff, yeah, I would go there. But the wardrobes and everything, they're all, I swear that could be a cinematic universe and nobody would bat an eye, because it's all like the same weird, like lazy cinematography and everything. And it was a weird time for video game movies. Like Mortal Kombat, I think people really liked it because it didn't look like a video game movie, because it's very different from those other three movies.
Mm-hmm. And recently, I think only recently, that one of the directors of Super Mario Brothers, Annabelle Jenkel, she's the only one that's made a movie since, of the two, of the husband-wife pair, she's the only one that's made a movie since then. And it was just released, and it's just now finishing its festival run. I don't know when it's coming out.
That must have been that whole thing is it's so fascinating to me. It's so weird. You know, it's just weird how you take the Super Mario Brother property and then you decide to make it like Blade Runner-y. And I kind of understand, like, if you're a filmmaker, why you would want to do that. But why would you pick that property? It's so bizarre to me. Just so bizarre.
It's Annabelle Jenkel and it's Rockle and Jenkel. I don't know, but yeah, it's a weird. It was an odd movie, and you know, and Ed Solomon was talking about it today on the Collider podcast about like how like you know when it came time to like you know do the writing credits for the movie, no one wanted a credit on the movie, and he was on vacation, so when it came time to like. Determine it, so that's how he got writing credit, because he really didn't do a whole lot of writing for that movie. Like none of his stuff really made it in, except for like couple scenes, and he has like almost has the sole credit for the movie.
That's hilarious. You know, the thing with that movie for me is I love Bob Hoskins because Roger Rabbit, so I was a huge fan of it. I was very excited to see him as Mario. And Dennis Hopper, you know, was Dennis Hopper. But that film introduced me to John Leguizamo, who has been one of my favorites ever since. I just thought he was I thought he was fantastic in that movie. I know he feels otherwise, you know, and has other opinions and stuff.
He did the best he could.
I thought he was great. He had great energy, and I actually became a big fan of his. And I watched, like, when he's even to this day, when he's in something, I'm very interested and intrigued in what he's going to bring to the table. I really like his performances.
Yeah. So, kind of moving away from that, what was going on in the 2000s for you?
So the beginning of it, 2000 to 2003, I was in college and I went I took some film studies there. So I was pretentious and all that. I watched a lot of movies, my God, I watched everything in college. Those 3 years, I watched every single movie. That's when I discovered Kevin Smith I was late to the game there, but I watched. I'm a huge fan of them all. I started with Dogma, Clerks, Chasing Amy. Just obsessed with them all. I worked at a movie theater for a summer. That was a terrible job. I worked in fries. I made fries.
Oh my!
Hot garbage. Yeah, I did not want that. I didn't want to, that was the one spot I didn't want to work in the theater, and that's where I worked. But I did it for the free movies. So I watched everything. That was the summer Fast and Furious 1 came out, and I watched every single. I can't believe there's 8 or 9 coming of those things. I watched every single movie.
And they're going to outer space.
Yeah, I don't. The whole thing is just so crazy. That franchise is the most remarkable franchise. It's the same writer for all of them. But I think the new one has someone else. Hobbs and Shaw aside.
Yeah.
I think it's the same guy. But the thing is, you know, the first one was whatever. The second one was whatever. The third one was basically a straight to video movie that they released in the theater.
And but it's really good.
That's why it was released in the theater, because it's actually probably the best of the original three.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, excuse me, everybody was like, well, we want to come back now. And it was like full franchise reboot. And then The Rock's like, well, I need in on this. And Ludacris was like, did you forget about me? And like, it's just so remarkable how all these people come back. And even when they die, they're coming back, apparently. And it just keeps. It's so fascinating. Like, I'm guessing that working on those movies is now the most fun all these people are having, aside from the fact that, you know, half of them can't get a hit if they try it other than that. But, like, it's got to be – the pay has got to be good, but it's got to be a lot of fun to go on set every day.
It has to be because, it's run like a family. Like you're a director of that franchise, you know, for James Wan and F. Gary Gray, you know, you're coming to this franchise where it's already a family unit. You're just kind of coming in and putting your own spin in it. And I think that's why Fast Furious 7 is so well, because, you know, now with Aquaman, you know, we can see, you know, Wan's chops for action, and it's pretty good. Like, it's a pretty unique style to him. That only his
co- He's definitely got a unique style. Yeah.
What?
Well, he's definitely got a unique style for it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, only, like, Lee Whannell has a variation of his unique style when it comes to action. So, it's, yeah, I think... And then F. Gary Gray, it's fine, I guess. His F8 movie is fine. I think a lot of people deserve justice, you know, for things that happen in that movie, but, you know, whatever. Anyway.
I can't remember that movie.
But so, it also, wasn't that the summer of, like, The Mummy Returns and Jurassic Park 3? Like, Universal just had a huge summer?
Yeah, I saw, was it Mummy Returns that year? Maybe. I saw Jurassic, that was Planet of the Apes, Tim Burton.
Oh, my.
Jurassic Park 3, mm-hmm. American Pie 2.
Oh, wow. And that was a huge hit.
I saw a Scary Movie 2 also.
Even bigger, or close to bigger hit.
Yeah, it was huge. So Scary Movie 2 I saw a few times in the theater. Jurassic Park 3 I saw 6 times that summer for free. And then Planet of the Apes I saw 5 times, the Tim Burton one, because it's the greatest movie ever made. And American Pie I saw 5 or 6 times. I went to go see everything. Legally Blonde came out that summer. There was one Billy Crystal movie, Rob Reiner directed it. What the heck was that called? America's Sweethearts, which that one came out that summer. I saw them all. If a movie came out, I was like, when's my shift? This time? Okay. I got 2 hours. I'm going to go see this movie. I planned it all out. I saw them all as many times. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back was that summer. Saw that a bunch of times. What was that other one with Chris Rock and Bill Murray?
Down with Love, I think.
No, it's the cartoon. Osmosis Jones.
Oh, Osmosis Jones.
Osmosis Jones came out. Yeah. That was God. There was Rush Hour Two. Yeah, it was a crazy summer. Everything came out that summer. I saw them all too. I went to everything.
Now in hindsight,
hated the job, but I saved them all.
And then it ended with, you know, the two big heavy hitters, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I wasn't in the theater for that because I went to school like 2 hours away, so I was on campus, so I quit at the end. I went over there, I had never read Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings going into either one of those. And I loved them both a lot. I was surprised because Harry Potter, I was like, oh, it's for kids, and I was like, oh, that's what I like about it. It's for kids. And then Lord of the Rings, I'm weird with fantasy where I either really like it or I can't stand it. Like, it's a hard line. And a lot of times I fall on the I can't stand it line. I'm not going to name the ones that I don't like, though. But, like, a lot of times they land on that side and I'm just like, oh, I can't stand this. So I went into Lord of the Rings nervously. And when it ended, I bought all three books. And then I bought The Hobbit. And then I wrote bought like all the spinoff books, and I just ended up really, really enjoying those movies. I like the Hobbit movies, but I think they made the mistake of shooting them at 60 frames. I think that was a mistake.
Yeah, I think the bigger mistake was splitting it into three movies.
Well, yeah, that's another mistake. But once it starts looking like a British soap opera, I just can't get past it.
Yeah, I only saw the first one in the high frame rate, and then I kind of just gave up on it. And I didn't really care for it after the first one. And I think the second, you know, Hobbit movie is really good, but I mean, then the third one is just kind of like, it's just one extended battle sequence.
Yeah, which I think because of Lord of the Rings, that's what I think the studio probably thought people wanted. Like they put battle scenes in Alice in Wonderland and Narnia and Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. You know, like whatever. This is where they want to take movies. This is what they think people want to see, right? Game of Thrones, these big battles. So they start just, they get the whole movie. We don't need depth, and you do it. So.
Yeah, that's the problem is, you know, that's kind of the Lord of the Rings effect, because Lord of the Rings had, you know, battle sequences pretty much at the end of each one. Like, there was, you know, there was some kind of battle. Yeah.
But it makes sense for that, right? Like, and they worked where they put them. But it makes sense to end the movie on a battle as long as there's a purpose.
And I mean, each movie is in itself like a war film. So
yeah, oh for sure.
I mean, it's a fantasy, but it's a war film, you know, against two opposing sides, you know, hundreds of, you know, bodies 100%. Just pounding each other.
Absolutely.
Yes. So with that, I mean, what more? We're gonna have to do a part two of this eventually, but because this is really good. We're gonna split this into three parts just so we can get the full trilogy effect. I'm kidding.
The third one would just be a giant battle between you and I.
Yes,
we'll duke it out for 3.5 hours.
Yes. So. Kind of teasing everybody, what happened after college?
I'll make it brief. I had a bunch of jobs, and then Marvel movies took over the world.
All right. Perfect. I think that's a good tease. James, we're going to have to do a part two on this.
Sounds good.
Because of timing. But where can the good people find you?
You can find me on the Twitterverse at Petzafina, PEZZFINA, or double Z if you are Canadian or British. And I do a lot of writing, and I have a Star Wars podcast called Rebel Scum Podcast as well.
Link for that podcast will be in the description below.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, James. We will definitely be coming back really soon with part two of this. Thank you. Thanks, James. Thanks, everyone. We will be We'll be back with part two. We will be back with it sometime whenever we can reconnect again. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you next week.